My husband claimed he cheated because I let myself go after having our twins, but when I discovered he'd been planning to leave me from the moment I got pregnant. I exposed his 3-year plan to everyone we knew. He lost his job, his girlfriend, and his family's respect. I'm Sarah, 34, and I work as a pediatric occupational therapist at a children's hospital in Portland, Oregon. My husband David, 36, was an account executive at a digital marketing agency, and we've been married for 8 years. We have 3-year-old twins, Emma and Jake, who are the absolute lights of my life. Before I tell you about the devastation David caused, I want to paint a picture of what our life looked like before everything fell apart. David and I met in college and dated for 4 years before getting married. Our relationship had always felt solid and supportive. We both worked demanding jobs but made time for each other, traveled together, and shared similar goals about starting a family. David was charming, ambitious, and seemed genuinely excited about becoming a father when we started trying for kids. The pregnancy with the twins was difficult from the start. I had severe morning sickness that lasted well into my second trimester, which made working exhausting. By month 6, I was on modified bed rest due to preterm labor concerns, and I had to take early maternity leave. David seemed supportive during this time, taking on more household responsibilities and coming to every doctor's appointment with me. Emma and Jake were born at 35 weeks and spent 3 weeks in the NICU. Those were the most stressful weeks of our marriage, but David seemed to handle it well. He was attentive to me and the babies, bringing me food at the hospital and staying overnight when I couldn't. I thought we were becoming stronger as a team through this challenge. The first year with newborn twins was brutal, as any parent of multiples will tell you. I was breastfeeding both babies, getting maybe 3 hours of sleep per night, and dealing with postpartum anxiety. My body was exhausted and healing, and honestly, personal grooming and appearance became the absolute lowest priority. Some days I barely managed to shower, let alone style my hair or put on real clothes. I knew I looked tired and disheveled most of the time, but I assumed David understood that this was temporary. We both agreed that I would take a full year of maternity leave to get the babies established in routines before returning to work. I thought he was being supportive when he'd tell me to rest instead of worrying about my appearance or when he'd suggest I stay home instead of joining him at work events because I seemed overwhelmed. Looking back now, I realized that David's support was actually manipulation designed to keep me isolated and insecure. But at the time, sleep-deprived and overwhelmed, I interpreted his behavior as caring rather than controlling. The first real warning sign came when the twins were about 18 months old. I'd started to regain some energy and was slowly getting back into routines that included taking care of myself. I'd lost most of the pregnancy weight, started doing yoga again, and was making more effort with my appearance when we went out together. Instead of seeming pleased that I was feeling more like myself, David started making subtle comments about how I'd changed since becoming a mother. He'd suggest that I was trying too hard or that my attempts to dress up seemed desperate. When I'd get excited about a new outfit or hairstyle, he'd make jokes about soccer mom makeovers or ask if I was going through some kind of phase. These comments were confusing because they seemed to contradict what I thought David would want. I assumed he'd be happy that I was taking better care of myself and feeling more confident. Instead, his remarks made me second-guess my efforts and wonder if I was somehow being inappropriate or silly. Around the same time, David started working longer hours and traveling more frequently for client meetings. He'd come home from these trips seeming energized and talkative about work, but distant and critical when it came to our home life. He'd make comments about how the house was messier than when he left, or how the kids seemed fussier, or how I looked tired and stressed. I started to feel like I was failing at being a wife and mother, despite working incredibly hard to manage 2 toddlers and a household. David's criticisms were subtle but constant, and they began to erode my confidence in ways I didn't even recognize at the time. The situation reached a breaking point about 6 months ago, when the twins were 2.5. I decided to surprise David with a romantic evening at home after the kids went to bed. I'd arranged for my sister to babysit the next morning so we could sleep in together, and I bought new lingerie and made his favorite dinner. When David came home from work that evening, instead of being pleased by my efforts, he seemed almost annoyed. He made comments about how I was trying to recreate something that wasn't there anymore and suggested that maybe we should accept that things had changed since becoming parents. I was hurt and confused by his reaction, but I tried to salvage the evening by asking what was wrong and how I could help fix whatever issues he was feeling in our marriage. That's when David delivered the crushing blow that would haunt me for months. He told me that he'd been feeling disconnected from me since the twins were born, and that he wasn't sure if our marriage could recover from the changes in our relationship. He said that I'd become a completely different person since becoming a mother, and that he missed the woman he'd married. When I asked him to be more specific about what had changed, David's response was devastating. He said that I'd let myself go both physically and emotionally, that I'd become boring and obsessed with baby stuff, and that he felt like he was living with a roommate rather than a wife. I was shocked by this assessment because I felt like I'd been working incredibly hard to balance being a good mother with being a good partner. I asked David what I could do to improve things between us, and he suggested that maybe we should take a break so he could figure out what he really wanted. The idea of separating with 2 young children was terrifying to me, so I begged David to try marriage counseling or to give me a chance to address whatever issues he was seeing. He agreed to counseling, but his attitude during those sessions made it clear that he'd already mentally checked out of our marriage. David would spend our counseling sessions listing my supposed failures as a wife and partner, while presenting himself as a long-suffering husband who'd tried to make things work. He'd talk about how I changed and become someone he didn't recognize, while the therapist tried to help us communicate more effectively. I left those sessions feeling even more broken and confused than before. I started to believe that maybe David was right, that maybe I had become someone boring and unattractive, and that maybe I was responsible for the problems in our marriage. This went on for about 2 months, with me desperately trying to prove that I could be the wife David wanted while he became increasingly distant and critical. I started working out obsessively, spending money we didn't have on new clothes and beauty treatments, and arranging for babysitters so David and I could have date nights. Nothing I did seemed to make a difference. David would find fault with every effort I made, suggesting that I was trying too hard or that my attempts at improvement were too little, too late. I began to feel like I was losing my mind, constantly second-guessing myself and wondering what I was doing wrong. The situation changed completely 3 months ago, when I made a discovery that shattered my entire understanding of what had been happening in my marriage. I was doing laundry and found a receipt in David's pants pocket for dinner at an expensive restaurant on the night when he told me he was working late. The receipt was for two people and included a bottle of wine that cost more than we usually spent on groceries for a week. My heart started racing as I looked at the date and time on the receipt. It was from a Tuesday evening about a month earlier, when David had texted me saying he'd be home late because of a client emergency. He'd come home around 11 p.m. claiming to have eaten a quick sandwich at his desk, but this receipt showed he'd been at a romantic dinner with someone else. I sat on our bedroom floor staring at that receipt, feeling like my entire world was crumbling. All of David's criticisms and suggestions that I was the problem in our marriage suddenly took on a completely different meaning. He wasn't trying to help me become a better wife, he was laying the groundwork to justify cheating on me. I realized that I needed to know the truth about what David had been doing, so I made a decision that would change everything. I hired a private investigator. The private investigator I chose was a woman named Janet who specialized in marital infidelity cases. She was professional, discreet, and had excellent reviews from other clients who'd been in similar situations. I met with Janet the day after finding the receipt, and I shared everything I could remember about David's behavior changes over the past 2 years. Janet explained that her investigation would likely take several weeks to gather comprehensive evidence, and that I should continue acting normal at home while she worked. She also recommended that I start documenting David's behavior and comments in a journal, in case the information became relevant for divorce proceedings. The waiting period while Janet conducted her investigation was agonizing. I had to continue living with David, pretending everything was normal, while knowing that he was likely betraying our marriage and lying to my face every day. During those weeks, David's behavior became even more cruel and manipulative. He started making more frequent comments about my appearance and personality, often in front of the twins. He'd make jokes about mommy being grumpy or suggest that I needed to lighten up when I tried to address his criticisms. I also noticed that David was being more secretive with his phone and computer. He'd take calls in the other room, claiming they were work-related, and he'd close his laptop when I walked into the room. When I asked about his increased privacy, he accused me of being paranoid and clingy. Janet's preliminary findings came back after 3 weeks, and they were even worse than I'd feared. David wasn't just having a casual affair, he was in a serious relationship with a 26-year-old marketing coordinator named Ashley who worked at a different agency. They'd been seeing each other for over 8 months, and according to Janet's surveillance, they were spending multiple nights per week together. But the most devastating part of Janet's report was the timeline. David had started pursuing Ashley just 3 months after the twins were born, which meant he'd been cheating for most of the time I thought we were working through normal new parent challenges together. Janet had photos of David and Ashley together at restaurants, leaving her apartment building, and even shopping for what appeared to be household items. She'd also discovered that David had been telling Ashley that our marriage was essentially over and that he was planning to file for divorce as soon as the twins were old enough. Update 1, Janet's investigation revealed information that completely changed my understanding of David's betrayal. It wasn't just an affair, it was a calculated long-term plan to replace me while keeping me emotionally broken and financially dependent. Through social media monitoring and surveillance, Janet discovered that David had been telling Ashley a completely fabricated story about our marriage. According to conversations Ashley had with her friends, which Janet accessed through a contact who worked at Ashley's gym, David had told Ashley that I was mentally unstable after becoming a mother and that I'd become abusive and controlling. David had apparently described me as someone who'd completely fallen apart after having children and who was making his life miserable with constant demands and emotional outbursts. He'd portrayed himself as a devoted father who was staying in an unhappy marriage only for the sake of the twins. This revelation was devastating because I realized that David's cruel comments about my appearance and personality weren't just thoughtless remarks made during a difficult time. They were part of a deliberate campaign to destroy my self-esteem so thoroughly that I wouldn't fight back when he eventually left me. Even more disturbing was Janet's discovery of David's financial behavior over the past 2 years. He'd been systematically moving money out of our joint accounts and into a separate account that Ashley had access to. He'd also taken out a credit card in my name and run up significant debt, which he'd hidden by intercepting the statements before I could see them. Janet's analysis of our financial record showed that David had spent over $30,000 on his relationship with Ashley, including expensive dinners, weekend trips, jewelry, and what appeared to be rent payments for a studio apartment. He'd been financing his double life with money from our children's education funds and our emergency savings. The most chilling discovery was a series of text messages Janet had obtained through her investigation methods. In these messages, David and Ashley discussed their timeline for making the transition. They planned for David to file for divorce in the spring, using my supposed mental instability and our incompatible parenting styles as grounds. According to their plan, David would seek primary custody of the twins based on claims that I was an unfit mother, while Ashley would move into the role of stepmother. They'd already been apartment hunting together and had discussed schools for Emma and Jake. Reading these messages was like discovering that my entire life had been an elaborate lie. While I'd been struggling with postpartum anxiety and exhaustion, believing that we were working through normal marriage challenges, David had been plotting to take my children away from me and replace me with a younger woman. But Janet's investigation also provided me with powerful ammunition for fighting back. Every cruel comment David had made about my appearance, every manipulation tactic he'd used to isolate me, every lie he told about his whereabouts was now documented and could be used as evidence of his psychological abuse. I realized that David's strategy depended on me being too broken and confused to effectively defend myself. He'd spent 2 years systematically destroying my confidence so that when he finally revealed his affair and filed for divorce, I'd be too defeated to fight for custody or a fair settlement. But David had made one crucial miscalculation. By being so thorough in his cruelty, he created a paper trail of his own manipulation that would ultimately destroy him. Update 2. Armed with Janet's evidence, I began planning my counterattack. I decided that if David wanted to destroy me slowly and methodically, I would destroy him quickly and completely. My first step was to consult with Catherine Walsh, one of the most respected divorce attorneys in Portland. I'd researched divorce lawyers during the 3 weeks while Janet was conducting her investigation, and Catherine had an excellent reputation for handling complex cases involving financial fraud and psychological abuse. When I showed Catherine the evidence Janet had gathered, her response was immediate and decisive. She said David's behavior constituted financial abuse, emotional abuse, and adultery, and that we could use this evidence to seek a highly favorable divorce settlement and primary custody of the twins. Catherine also referred me to a forensic accountant who could trace exactly how much money David had stolen from our family accounts to fund his affair. This was important because it would allow us to seek reimbursement for the funds he'd misappropriated, plus damages for the financial fraud. While Catherine and the forensic accountant worked on the legal strategy, I focused on protecting myself and the twins from David's planned destruction. I opened separate bank accounts in my name only and began documenting everything David said and did with timestamp photos and voice recordings. I also started quietly rebuilding my support network, which I realized David had been systematically destroying over the past 2 years. He'd subtly discouraged me from maintaining close friendships, suggesting that other parents wouldn't understand our situation or that I was too negative to be good company. I reached out to friends I'd lost touch with and was amazed by how supportive they were when I carefully explained what had been happening. Many of them said they'd noticed changes in David's behavior or in how he talked about me, but they hadn't known how to address it. My sister Rachel, who lived across town, was particularly helpful during this time. When I told her about David's affair and his planned custody grab, she immediately offered to help with childcare and emotional support. She also admitted that she'd never liked David and had been worried about some of the things he'd said about me over the past year. The most important part of my preparation was getting professional help for the psychological damage David had inflicted. Catherine referred me to a therapist who specialized in emotional abuse recovery, and working with Dr. Jennifer Hayes helped me understand the extent of David's manipulation. Dr. Hayes explained that what David had done was called gaslighting, a form of psychological abuse where the abuser systematically makes the victim question their own reality and self-worth. She helped me see that David's criticisms of my appearance and personality weren't based in reality, they were calculated attacks designed to make me easier to control. Through therapy, I began to understand that the boring, unattractive woman David had described wasn't who I really was. I'd been a dedicated mother managing an incredibly difficult situation while David was sabotaging me behind the scenes. The exhaustion and overwhelm I'd experienced weren't personal failures, they were normal responses to an impossible situation. Dr. Hayes also helped me prepare for the custody battle by documenting how David's psychological abuse had affected not just me, but potentially our children. His comments about mommy being grumpy in front of Emma and Jake were examples of parental alienation, which family courts take very seriously. After 6 weeks of preparation, Catherine and I were ready to strike. We decided to serve David with divorce papers and a restraining order simultaneously, along with a civil lawsuit for financial fraud and emotional distress. The timing was crucial. We chose a Friday evening when David was planning to have dinner with Ashley, thinking he'd be in a good mood and unprepared for what was coming. I arranged for Rachel to take Emma and Jake for the weekend so they wouldn't witness the confrontation. When David came home that Friday to change clothes before his work dinner, he found me sitting in the living room with Catherine and a sheriff's deputy. The look of shock and confusion on his face when he realized what was happening was the first genuine emotion I'd seen from him in months. The deputy served David with the papers while Catherine calmly explained that we knew about his affair with Ashley, his financial fraud, and his planned custody grab. David's initial response was to deny everything, but when Catherine started reading direct quotes from his text messages with Ashley, his demeanor changed completely. Instead of the smooth, manipulative husband who'd been gaslighting me for 2 years, David became defensive and desperate. He started making threats about what he'd do in the divorce proceedings and how he'd make sure I never saw the twins again. This reaction was exactly what Catherine had prepared me for. She'd explained that abusers often escalate their threats when their control is challenged, and that documenting this behavior would strengthen our case. I recorded David's threats, and the deputy witnessed his aggressive behavior. David's final attempt to regain control was to call Ashley and ask her to come to the house to support him through this crisis. When Ashley arrived and saw the legal papers, she realized that David's story about our marriage being over wasn't actually true. Ashley's reaction to learning that David was still fully married with two young children was priceless. According to neighbors who witnessed the scene, she screamed at David for lying to her and stormed out, leaving him alone to face the consequences of his betrayal. Update 3. The aftermath of David's exposure moved quickly and devastatingly for him, while providing me with the justice and closure I desperately needed. Within 48 hours of being served with the divorce papers, David's carefully constructed double life completely collapsed. Ashley broke up with him immediately after learning the truth about our marriage, and she contacted Catherine's office to provide additional evidence about David's deception and financial fraud. It turned out that Ashley had genuinely believed David's story about me being mentally unstable and their marriage being essentially over. When she realized that David had been lying to both of us, she was furious enough to cooperate with our legal case. She provided bank records showing David's financial support, copies of text messages discussing their future plans, and a detailed timeline of their relationship. Ashley's cooperation was devastating for David because it eliminated any possibility of him denying the affair or claiming it was brief and meaningless. Her evidence proved that David had been living a double life for over 8 months and had been planning to abandon his family for months before I discovered the truth. The forensic accountant's analysis revealed that David had stolen nearly $45,000 from our family accounts to fund his affair and his planned new life with Ashley. He'd used money from the twins' education funds, our emergency savings, and credit cards in my name to pay for expensive dinners, weekend trips, Ashley's rent, and even an engagement ring he'd planned to give her. Catherine used this evidence to file additional charges of financial fraud and identity theft. She also presented evidence of David's psychological abuse to the family court judge who would be deciding our custody arrangement. David's legal problems extended beyond our divorce case. His employer discovered the affair when Ashley contacted their HR department to report that David had been using company resources for personal matters and had been lying about his marital status on official documents. The marketing agency where David worked had a strict policy against relationships between employees and vendors, and David's affair with Ashley, who worked at a partner agency, violated both professional ethics and company policy. David was terminated immediately, losing not just his job but also his reputation in Portland's relatively small marketing community. Within a month of the confrontation, David had lost his wife, his girlfriend, his job, his savings, and most of his friendships. The speed of his downfall was remarkable, but it made sense given how many lies he'd had to maintain to keep his double life functioning. The custody evaluation process was particularly satisfying. David had planned to portray me as an unstable mother who was unfit to care for the twins, but the evidence of his psychological abuse completely backfired on him. Dr. Hayes testified about the emotional abuse I'd endured and explained how David's behavior had been designed to undermine my confidence as both a wife and mother. The custody evaluator concluded that David's systematic manipulation posed a significant risk to Emma and Jake's emotional development. The judge awarded me primary custody of the twins, with David receiving only supervised visitation until he completed anger management and parenting classes. David was also required to pay child support based on his previous income, even though he was now unemployed. The financial settlement was equally favorable. David was required to reimburse all the money he'd stolen from our family accounts, plus damages and attorney fees. He was also responsible for the debt he'd accumulated in my name, and he had to give me his share of our house equity. Most importantly for my long-term security, David was required to maintain life insurance policies with me as the beneficiary until the twins turned 18. This protected Emma and Jake's financial future even if David continued making poor decisions. The psychological impact of seeing David face real consequences for his cruelty was profound. For 2 years, he'd made me believe that I was the problem in our marriage and that his dissatisfaction was my fault. Watching his lies unravel and seeing him lose everything he betrayed me for was incredibly validating. Dr. Hayes helped me understand that my healing process would take time, but that confronting David's abuse head-on had been crucial for my recovery. She said that many victims of psychological abuse never get the kind of clear vindication I'd received, and that this closure would help me rebuild my confidence more quickly. Final update: 6 months after David's world imploded, my life has stabilized in ways I never could have imagined during the darkest period of his psychological abuse. The twins and I moved into a smaller house closer to my sister Rachel, and we've established routines that feel peaceful and manageable. Emma and Jake have adjusted well to the changes, and they seem happier now that they're not constantly exposed to David's negative energy and criticism. I returned to work at the children's hospital, and my colleagues were incredibly supportive when I explained what had happened. My supervisor allowed me to adjust my schedule to accommodate the twins' needs, and several co-workers offered to help with childcare during the transition period. Professionally, the experience of surviving David's abuse has actually made me better at my job. Working with children who've experienced trauma, I now have a deeper understanding of how psychological abuse affects development and relationships. I've been able to connect with young patients and their families in ways that feel more authentic and helpful. David's attempts to rebuild his life have been largely unsuccessful. He eventually found a lower-paying job at a small agency, but his reputation in the marketing industry has been permanently damaged. Several of our mutual friends have told me that David seems bitter and angry, blaming everyone except himself for the consequences of his choices. His relationship prospects appear limited, partly because his behavior during our divorce became public knowledge in our social circles. Women in his age range are wary of someone who was exposed as a psychological abuser and financial fraud, while younger women are put off by his obvious baggage and resentment. David's supervised visitations with Emma and Jake have been inconsistent. He often cancels at the last minute, claiming work conflicts, but I suspect he's struggling with seeing the children in a limited capacity after planning to have primary custody. The twins have stopped asking when Daddy is coming to visit, which suggests they're adapting to his inconsistent presence. The most unexpected positive outcome has been the relationships I've rebuilt with friends and family members. David's isolation tactics had been so gradual that I hadn't realized how cut off I'd become from people who cared about me. Reconnecting with these relationships has provided Emma, Jake, and me with a strong support network. I've also started dating again, though cautiously and with the help of Dr. Hayes to recognize healthy relationship patterns. The contrast between how potential partners treat me now versus how David treated me during our marriage is striking. I'm attracted to men who show genuine interest in my thoughts and opinions, who respect my role as a mother, and who don't try to tear down my confidence. Most importantly, I've learned to trust my own perceptions and instincts again. David's gaslighting had made me doubt my ability to accurately assess situations and relationships, but therapy and time have restored my confidence in my own judgment. The twins are thriving in our new environment. They're more talkative, more playful, and more willing to express their own opinions about things like what to have for dinner or which activities they want to try. I realize now that David's constant criticism and control had been affecting them too, creating an atmosphere of walking on eggshells that no child should have to navigate. Looking back, I can see that David's betrayal, while devastating at the time, ultimately freed me from a marriage that was slowly destroying my sense of self. His plan to break me down so thoroughly that I wouldn't fight back completely backfired, instead giving me the motivation and evidence I needed to build a better life for my children and myself. The woman David dismissed as boring and unattractive was actually a strong, capable mother who was managing an impossible situation while being systematically undermined by someone who claimed to love her. Now that I'm free from his manipulation, I can see clearly that the problem was never me. David's affair wasn't caused by me letting myself go after having children, it was caused by his decision to prioritize his own desires over his family's well-being. His cruel comments weren't honest feedback about my shortcomings, they were calculated attacks designed to make me easier to control and abandon. The hardest part of this experience wasn't discovering David's betrayal, it was realizing how completely I'd lost faith in myself under his psychological abuse. Recovery has meant not just rebuilding my life practically, but also rebuilding my trust in my own worth and capabilities. Today, Emma and Jake and I live in a house filled with laughter instead of criticism, support instead of manipulation, and genuine love instead of conditional approval. The peace we found together is worth more than any marriage built on lies and control could ever have been.